As Janine said, I'm Laurel Fowler, and I'm here from the Los Angeles County Immunization Program. I'm going to share with you a little bit of an experience that we had in LA County with implementing an autodialer campaign. So what I'm hoping to do today is discuss with you the autodialer immunization awareness campaign that was implemented within the Los Angeles County Immunization Program. Henceforth, will be known as LACIP for purposes of verbal efficiency, if you don't mind. Basically, I want to discuss the benefits, the implementation steps, the impact, and then also the key recommendations for improving effectiveness of such a campaign. So just a little bit of background. In 2007, the National Immunization Survey data revealed that 80.3% of Los Angeles County children between 19 and 35 months had received all vaccines in the 43133 series. And while that does meet the Healthy People 2010 goal, it still leaves about 20% of the kids at risk for vaccine-preventable diseases. And in a county the size of Los Angeles County, that's a pretty sizable number of kids. So what we wanted to do then was to go ahead and implement an autodialer immunization awareness campaign. We did that in September of 2008, and specifically, we were targeting parents of children up to 36 months of age who were due or overdue for immunizations. And what we did was we used pre-recorded telephone messages to improve parental awareness of immunizations. So again, a little more about background. We reached children that were enrolled in the Los Angeles Orange Immunization Network, or LINC, which is the local immunization registry in use in LA County. And really, we felt that using registry data would allow us to focus our campaign. Again, we could target these specific kids who were due or overdue for immunizations. It also allowed us to extract phone numbers specifically so we had access to individuals. And then also, we knew that it would help facilitate our assessment of the effectiveness of such a campaign because we would have registry data we could go back to and see if there'd been any impact. So what happened was parents received one of two pre-recorded messages. The first we called an educational message, which basically emphasized the importance of the role that immunizations play in preventing disease, and then encouraging parents to send an email to request an educational booklet. And that was the Vaccines and Your Baby booklet that was published by Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The second message we called a call to action message, and that essentially emphasized or encouraged parents to check their child's immunization record and then contact a countywide information line to receive information about where they could go for free or low-cost vaccines within the county. And in order to assess for the impact of this campaign, we decided to treat those two groups as kind of our intervention groups. And then we had a separate control group that essentially would not receive either of these messages, but instead would be just receiving whatever standard care they would normally have received during this time. And I'll just mention that both of the recorded messages were about 1.5 minutes in length and were recorded in both English and Spanish. So why did we consider an autodialer campaign? We felt that this offered a really unique way to reach parents in their homes. And, you know, it's a convenient way to reach them. And we felt like we might be able to get to parents who might not otherwise hear these messages. So these might be parents that aren't getting the messages that are conveyed out in community presentations or health fairs and those kinds of venues. Also, they can be integrated in other reminder and recall or multi-component strategies that already might be implemented by the program. We also looked at the research that showed we had a couple of studies that revealed that this type of activity has been shown to be effective. So there was a 1995 study that looked at the impact of computer-generated phone calls on the kept appointment rate at a public clinic, and there was a significant improvement there. Also, another study in 1998, based on data from Kaiser of Northern California, revealed an increase in immunizations received by clients at 24 months of age, and also improved awareness on the part of the parents. So some other potential reasons to look at an autodialer are that they offer some benefits over other traditional types of outreach campaigns. So for example, as I said, it allows you to narrow cast. You can specifically target the individuals that you want to reach. In this case, it was children who were due or overdue for immunizations. It also allows us to reach parents who might not be reached through other more traditional media. So for example, at a local health department has a limited budget, we might be able to only target two newspapers in the community if we wanted to do some kind of outreach media campaign. But what are the chances that parents in our target population, all of them will read one of those two newspapers? Probably slim. Also, this kind of campaign can be evaluated more precisely, and specifically because we were using registry data, we knew we'd have somewhere we could go back to. And then finally, you can reach a relatively large number of people at a pretty reasonable cost. So we had over 10,000 calls that were attempted. About 74% of those were completed, and it resulted in a completed cost per call of about 47 cents. So what I want to do is just share with you the steps we took to implement this campaign, and then share with you some of the things we learned and what you might take away from this if this is something that you would be interested in implementing at some point. So again, what we did was we focused on an educational message. This was not a reminder recall message, but an awareness campaign to 10,000 parents whose children were due or overdue for immunizations. And the goals were to increase awareness of the importance of immunizations, to link parents with vaccines, and to increase immunization coverage levels. What we would recommend, again, this is going to seem common sense, but to select measurable outcomes so you can have a sense of whether or not your campaign actually had an impact, tailor your message to reach your specific audience, and then to be realistic about what you can accomplish. These messages are going to be short, and so there isn't a lot that you can pack into a brief message like that. We also wanted to assess the impact of this kind of tool on this type of outreach awareness campaign and see if this is something that we might want to implement in the future. The other thing that I would say is that it's critical to know your sample data, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. The next step was to clearly define the target population and the data source. So again, our population were children enrolled in the registry who were between 4 and 36 months of age. Their link record in the registry had to have been updated in the previous 12 months. And the reason for that was we wanted to make sure we had accurate immunization history and phone numbers. So we felt that if they'd been seen in the previous year, that more than likely that might have been the treating provider and the record might be accurate. Also, you have to have a phone number, obviously, if you're going to do a campaign by phone. And then we were looking for kids who had between 1 and 11 vaccines that were due, that were indicated and not yet received. After we pulled the sample, we had to apply some unanticipated exclusion criteria, again, because we didn't have a complete sense for the sample data. We found some of the phone numbers didn't make sense, so they weren't valid phone numbers. Some of them were outside of Los Angeles County. We didn't think about the fact that we were targeting only English and Spanish, and we should have limited those that had a preferred language that was something other than English or Spanish. And then we also, if there were any children at the same phone number, multiple children at the same phone number, we excluded more than one child because what we were doing is really targeting the households. We didn't want multiple messages going to the same house. The advice that we have would be to, again, define your target population specifically to meet the goals that you're trying to accomplish, to consider targeting subgroups. So there might be a specific ethnic group that you want to target, or if there's a geographic region in the area that you serve, maybe you could identify zip codes or, again, define your population. And then really consider registry data. It's efficient, it's easy to access, and as I said, it's going to help with evaluation. The one thing I would say is just ensure that you know what the consent requirements are for communicating with parents with your registry. The next step was to oversample and then build in sufficient time for data cleaning. So we ended up with over 15,000 clients who met the study criteria, and they were then randomized into three groups: the educational message that I referenced, the call to action group, or into our control group. What our original plan was to have our sample pulled about 2 weeks before the campaign began and to have 9,000 kids per group. What we ended up with was a sample that was pulled 3 months prior to implementation of the campaign, and that was due to some technical issues that I'll address in a moment. And also, we only ended up with 15,000 children that met our inclusion criteria. So as a result, we ended up with smaller numbers of kids in each of the groups. So our advice would be to oversample to account for some of the things that you're going to encounter that are related to exclusions after your sample's pulled. So, for example, wrong numbers, disconnected phones that are continuously busy, they accounted for a significant number of the call attempts that we had. And then also build in sufficient time for data cleanup. So the next step would be to develop simple and concise messages that support your aims. And I will just mention there were some handouts on the back table. I know I don't have enough for everyone in the room, but the messages that we used for this campaign are actually included in the back of the handout as well. So again, our approach was to improve awareness, encourage vaccination, and link parents with vaccines. So what happened was live call recipients, so someone who picked up the phone, had the option to hear the message in English or Spanish. If an answering machine picked up, the message played first in English and then in Spanish. We also took the opportunity to try to evaluate whether or not we were reaching the intended audience, and we embedded a couple of survey questions that could be answered by people who answered the phone live. And that was to evaluate whether or not we reached the right people and whether or not the parents might have received other reminder notices in the previous 2 months. So our advice here would be to avoid emphatic statements in your messages, such as your child is due or overdue for immunizations, unless you are completely clear that your immunization history and your phone number are accurate, because you certainly don't want to be saying that to the wrong parent. Also, clearly state what it is you want them to do. Use simple language, translate messages into the common languages, and then keep the messages short. One of the things that challenged us was we had on-call prompts, introductions, things that lengthened the message that we didn't really think through completely, and it ended up making the calls longer than we had planned. So the next step was to develop the evaluation plan before you implement your campaign, and I know we're hearing that all over the place, but have that in mind when you start. So what we did was we developed process and outcome measures that were going to look at the number of completed calls, the referrals to the information line, the countywide information line, and then the numbers of vaccinations that were received within 60 days of the campaign launch. And the reason we looked at 60 days was we felt that that would give parents adequate time to contact the provider, schedule the appointment, and then follow through with that appointment, and then to give the provider time to update the record in the immunization registry. And our sample size was sufficient to detect any kinds of differences if they should exist. So our advice would be to track the number of immunizations that are received rather than an up-to-date rate. And for our time period, our evaluation time period, that was the most appropriate way, because a child might need multiple visits to be brought up to date on a series, for example. So up-to-date rate wouldn't be realistic given our evaluation time frame. And then choose measures that reflect your aim. So if this is an educational campaign and you want to direct people to your website, then you'd want to count web hits as a result. We do recommend establishing a control or a comparison group. And then what we found is that embedded surveys might not be the most efficient way to try to get to what we were looking at, because the response rates would be low. And I'll just share that it was, of the calls that were answered live, the completed calls, only 4% of the respondents completed the survey in our campaign. So the next step is to carefully select the vendor based on the needs that you have. So the immunization program, contracted with an external vendor who translated the scripts into Spanish and then recorded the Spanish version of the messages as well. They embedded the two-question survey. They set up the caller ID to reflect the immunization program office, so that's what the parents would see on the phone. They launched up to 3 call attempts per household, and then they provided us with guidance on script development and also provided aggregate and individual call reports. And what we would recommend is to really carefully consider, when selecting a vendor, information about the setup and transaction costs. So are there going to be calls? Are the costs based on completed calls? Are there additional costs for calls that exceed a certain length, say 60 seconds? You have to consider HIPAA and data exchange issues. So we actually executed between the immunization program and the vendor a business associate agreement, and there were no identifiable protected health information that were shared with the vendor. It was all coded. You need to consider the recording and the launch process. How much control do you want over that? What ability do you want to be able to generate reports, either locally, or is the vendor going to be doing that for you? And then responsiveness and access. You want to know what time zone your vendor's in, so if you need to communicate with them, are you going to have to wait till tomorrow to do it? You want to also know, are you going to have direct access to the people who are recording the messages? So if when you're listening to test calls, it's not right, are you going directly to the people who are going to re-record it, or do you have to work through a third party? And then finally, just a suggestion that you might think about linking payment to deliver on-time deliverables. So the next step is to record messages early and schedule several test calls for reasons that I just mentioned. So for this campaign, the medical director for Los Angeles County recorded the English version, and the vendor, as I said, recorded the Spanish. So that I already mentioned the answering machine message played both. These messages had to be re-recorded several times because of some technical challenges. So obviously this lengthened the process, the pre-implementation process significantly. And then listening to repeat test calls was key to us identifying were the prompts in the right place? Did the questions, did the direction make sense? Were the survey questions that we embedded appropriately placed? So our advice would be to record at least a month in advance of your planned launch and then test it. Test, and have a couple of people who are sitting down listening to these test calls. The messages go quickly, and you want to make sure that you're getting everything that's being said. So the next step is to really be strategic about the timing of the call. So we decided to launch this campaign between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Mondays through Thursdays, and it was a two-week campaign during September. We made this decision because we felt like we would probably reach a lot of answering machines, and that would give parents the opportunity to actually save the message, replay it, give them time to write information down if that's what they chose to do. Maybe we were a little overzealous about what parents were going to do with this. And then 2 weeks prior to the launch of the campaign, we notified all of the providers whose patients were included in the sample to let them know there was a possibility they might be getting phone calls from parents to schedule appointments for these kids. We also notified the countywide information line that calls might increase there to let them know. And then we prepared our staff internally in the event anyone called the program. So our advice and recommendation would be to really understand what time your campaign's launching. So if you guys are familiar with immunizations, you know what happens in September. Kids are going back to school. So there are all kinds of other promotional campaigns and awareness activities that are going on that, while we feel that our campaign coupled with that probably would make for a stronger message, it really confounded our ability to evaluate the effectiveness of this campaign. So carefully consider the timing. Are you trying to reach people by answering machines so they can maybe save a message? Are you trying to reach them live so they can answer some questions you might have? And then spread the calls out to avoid any kind of overload on the program. We only received 53 calls based on all the call attempts that were made directly to the program, and most of those were because people saw the caller ID, didn't bother to listen to the message, and wanted to know what we were calling about. So looking at the impact of the campaign, first we looked at call outcomes. So I already mentioned over 10,000 calls were attempted, 74% were completed, and a completed call for us was either someone answered it live or a message was left on an answering machine. And I do need to let you know that a completed call answered live does not necessarily mean that someone listened to the entire message. It means they heard more than 10 seconds of the message, and that was something, again, that we learned after the fact from the vendor. We didn't have the ability to know the length of the call. So obviously that's a piece of advice for moving forward. And then I guess, again, it's important to know that the embedded survey, 315 responses, it was a large number of people, but not really representative to be able to say anything. And there were no differences in the call outcome based on either the educational message or the call to action. We then looked at the request for information that went to the countywide information line. And so what we did was we looked at the period of time during the campaign and then 1 week following the conclusion in 2008 and then also for 2006, 2007 to see whether or not we were seeing an increase in that specific time frame. And in fact, we did. We saw an increase in English and Spanish calls. We have to be a little cautious about attributing it to our campaign because there may have been other things going on, like just an increased awareness about the countywide information line would have increased calls. Also, the back-to-school activities may have impacted that as well. I'm proud to say that the email option that we embedded into the educational message resulted in zero requests for an educational booklet by email. So, well, this is a learning process, and that's why we're sharing it with you. We learned that email is probably not the most effective way to get parents to request educational information. We were able to share the brochure or the booklet with 11 of the 53 people who contacted the program directly. And then finally, looking at the number of vaccines that were received as an assessment of the campaign impact, we went back to our registry data. And again, we looked at 60 days out, how many of the children included in the sample had immunizations that had been recorded. And what we found was absolutely no difference between our control or either of our educational message groups. We stratified the data so that we could look at some different variables. We looked at the type of message received, the educational or the call to action. We looked at the language, English or Spanish, the age of the child, younger or older than 24 months. We looked at the provider type, public or private, and we looked at VFC status, and again, proud to report, no differences. There are some things that may have impacted that. I've already mentioned the fact that we pulled our sample 3 months before the campaign actually launched. It's entirely possible that a lot of the children in the sample may have been vaccinated during that three-month period. This was over the summer and prior to back to school. So that may have had an impact on what we saw. If our campaign would have had an additive impact to the back-to-school efforts, we still would have expected to see perhaps maybe a bigger jump in our sample data. So, conclusions and recommendations. While our campaign did not appear to have any impact on information or vaccine-seeking behavior, we like to think that there's a potential that we've improved awareness about immunizations for these parents. I'm not sure whether or not they listened to the message, so it's hard to know. Some of the recommendations that we would have to further evaluate whether or not an autodialer campaign is effective or how it could be more effective would be to use targeted reminder and recall messages. Again, ours were educational in nature. A targeted reminder recall message might be more effective. Again, directing a parent, your child is due or overdue for an immunization. It might be more effective if it's delivered by a healthcare provider, by a health plan. Again, the Kaiser study that I cited earlier actually did show an effect when it was conducted by the health plan itself. If the messages are recorded by someone known to the family, that kind of personal touch might have more of an impact and might call more to action, parents to action. And then connecting recipients with their provider's office could have more of an impact as well. As I said, parents might be more likely to request an informational or educational booklet if it was easier to get to. We realized that the deterrent might have been who's going to sit on the listen to an answering machine message or on a call and write down a long email address that they have to send to, then get up, go to the computer, and send it. More important, many of our parents may not have had routine access to a computer or to the internet. So if there were a way to prompt on the call to either leave a message on a voicemail or connect the parent with someone live, that might be an effective way to get an educational booklet out to them. Also, we recommend testing the impact of two or more messages and then perhaps coupling an autodialer message with maybe a postcard or a letter. Again, the Kaiser study found that to be an effective method. And then autodialer campaigns haven't been extensively tested in health departments, community-based organizations, and coalitions. So we would encourage if anybody is interested in doing that to really look to try to assess for differential impacts and then make sure and disseminate the findings. So the last, I just wanted to acknowledge all the individuals within Los Angeles County who are involved in this project. And I'm not sure if we're going to take questions
now. Go ahead and see while this is fresh on people's minds.
Great. So if anybody has any questions, I hope I will be able to answer them for you.
Thank you, Laurel. This has really, really been interesting. I wonder if you guys gave some thought to if these phone calls were coming from the providers. I mean, would it have been possible for you to partner with the providers? Because, you know, there's so much research to show that they're the most influential, and would parents have been more likely to listen and attend to those messages rather than if it was something coming from the public health department?
Absolutely, and I think that's a really good point. What was different about this activity, our campaign, from other campaigns that have been implemented is that it was a third party. It wasn't the healthcare provider that was doing it, and I do think you're absolutely right. If there were a way that we could target it, again, 10,000 calls, and I don't recall even the number of providers that were represented by those children, but if we were to target it and partner with those healthcare providers, I think that's a really good suggestion, and I think it likely would be more effective.
I was just wondering if the phone numbers you had were home phones or were they cell phones, and if that would have made a difference that parents would have been more likely to answer a cell phone.
Thank you. Again, based on registry data, these are records that are created by the healthcare provider at the point of immunization. So it would be whatever phone number the patient identifies. Usually, typically, it's a home phone number, but if they don't have a landline, it could have been a cell number that was included in the registry. But I think that's a really good point. Great. Thank you very much.